MacCast, Sunday, January 13th, 2018. Hey, MacGeeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for MacGeeks by MacGeeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Hope you are having a wonderful day and had a great weekend, week, whatever it might be by the time you listen to this. It's always funny to do these intros because I never know when you're actually listening to the show. It could be right away, the day after I record this, or it could be weeks later. That's what podcasts are all about, right? That's why we love podcasts, or why I love podcasts, is they're there and ready for when I am ready to listen to them. So here I am for you. I've got some great Mac news and information and stories to deliver to you this week. And actually, things are picking up. We actually have quite a few things to get to in the news this time around. And also, when we get down to some of your feedback and questions, we're going to be getting into things like a little tip that I ran across personally, something that probably a lot of you already know, but I was actually puzzled by. So one that stumped me, and I thought I'd share what I found out along with you. We're also going to dive into a little bit more deeply, actually, and personally, into bent iPad Pros. I know that's been kind of a thing in the media. I have my own opinions on it. I'll talk about that a little bit. I already have. So if you've heard some of the past episodes, you probably have heard me mention my feelings on that. But I did want to, and I kind of threw this out to the MacCast community, I wanted to get someone on the show who's actually gone through the experience of a bent iPad Pro. And I found someone this week, so we're going to talk to him, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Apple Care and what happens if you find yourself not covered in a way you might be able to get some actual satisfaction, especially if you live outside the U.S. We're going to talk about augmented reality apps, and it should be a really great show. And I don't want to waste too much time, so we'll just jump right into some of the latest news stories, starting off with a little bit of follow-up from the last episode. We talked about the announcement at CES by Samsung that they are going to actually include AirPlay 2 in some of their 2019 smart televisions, and also that they are going to have an exclusive iTunes app available on their smart TV. So iTunes movies and TV shows, you'll be able to browse and buy those and do all that stuff through your Samsung smart TV right built into the app. Well, other manufacturers have also announced support for AirPlay 2 in their televisions, although again, the iTunes deal is exclusive to Samsung. But LG, Sony, Vizio are all going to have models of televisions in 2019 smart TVs that will include AirPlay 2. So you'll be able to stream video, audio, photos, and more directly from your iPhone or your iPad or Mac to a supported television set. And so that's pretty cool. Apple expanding out AirPlay 2. What's also super cool about it is some of those models, actually many of them, are going to also include HomeKit support. So that means you're going to be able to do things like control volume and playback and even more using Siri or the Home app from your iPhone, iPad, or Mac with your smart TV. And also, a developer did notice there's some new remote features in some of the betas of iOS, and it's looking like with the remote app, and I'm assuming some of the newer smart TVs, you're going to be able to do a lot more controls of things other than just volume. So brightness controls, other remote controls might be enabled this year with some software updates. So that's all pretty cool. Big things happening around television. We do know, and we don't have any stories about it this week, but we do know that Apple is getting ready to potentially launch their television service sometime soon. Many of us, myself included, are thinking first quarter of 2019. So all of this seems to play into that very, very nicely. Last time we talked about possible updates for iPhones in 2019. I know we're just barely into the new year. It seems like very first day we started getting rumors and speculation about what a 2019 iPhone might look like. And as a matter of fact, we start getting those rumors at the end of 2018. The minute it seems like there's new iPhones out, we're talking about the next iPhone. And last time we talked about the possibility of that triple lens camera. There was that sort of leaked render that was out there, possibly most likely a prototype for a tri-lens iPhone that showed the what I'm calling the cracker bump. It looks like a Ritz cracker on the back of the iPhone. So if you hate the camera bump, yeah, you're going to really hate this thing if that ends up being what Apple actually ships. But that means we're in the season of what's happening with the next iPhone. This week we heard that there is an Australian Apple supplier, AMS. They announced that they have RGB light and infrared proximity sensors that are actually designed to go behind an OLED display. And these are only a couple of sensors, of course, that make up Apple's TrueDepth camera system. But it could mean that there's maybe a smaller notch on the top of this year's iPhones if Apple can integrate this kind of technology. So I don't think it means necessarily the notch is going away. Maybe it's going to be reduced. We have been hearing that Apple wants to sort of reduce the impact of it. We could also see Apple move in the trend. Some of the other smartphone manufacturers are moving in and just have punch holes for the different lenses and sensors. I don't know how I feel about that. I've kind of seen some side-by-side images, notch versus punch hole, and I almost find that the little punch holes are even more distracting because you expect to have this sort of seamless experience, and it doesn't look like it's really designed. It almost looks like sort of an afterthought, but that's just my opinion on that. Anyway, this technology, the sort of underglass technology, is maybe the wave of the future, right? We've talked about having under the glass fingerprint sensors. Apple had patents years ago for actually building in camera sensors in between the pixels of an LCD display. I don't know if that's a kind of technology that they're still pursuing, but imagine the whole sort of LCD screen being the front-facing camera. So a lot of these things are very interesting. Apple does want to reduce or eliminate that notch at some point, so all of these technologies could potentially play into that. Now, moving back to the triple lens camera system, the Wall Street Journal also ran a report saying that that feature is planned for a future model of the iPhone. So that seems to corroborate what we've heard before. And they are saying, however, that that triple lens system might be exclusive to the Plus model of the phone. So Apple moving back away from the parity between the 5.8-inch and the 6.5-inch iPhone, the Plus iPhone, and going to where the smaller model would have a two-lens camera system, and then the larger version would have the more premium camera. I would presume that's just because of the size of the device and fitting more camera lenses and technology in there. But that, I think, would be a little bit of a disappointment. They also claim that Apple will still have a three-phone lineup with two OLED models and an LCD model. But in that piece, note that in 2020, Apple could drop the LCD model altogether. And they cite slow sales of the iPhone XR, just overall kind of lukewarm response to the iPhone XR as a possible reason why Apple wants to move away from LCD. I don't know if I buy that. I think they had planned to move away from LCD all along. It's just a matter of the technology getting down in price to where it makes sense to have it on the more affordable model of the iPhone. So I think that was a trend that was going to happen regardless, but looks like that might not happen in 2019, probably going to happen in 2020. They also say, though, that the iPhone XR, the LCD model, could be updated with a dual lens camera system. And again, if they're going to do the triple lens only on the Plus model, that kind of puts things in a little weird position. Again, though, I guess we had that before when we had the iPhone 7 with a single lens camera and the iPhone 7 Plus with the dual lens camera. So being exclusive to the larger model, along with, I guess, the lower priced model, the iPhone SE. I think all those were out around the same time, if my history serves me. It starts to get confusing when we go across all of these old iPhone models, but I think I am remembering that correctly, at least I hope so. Another interesting thing mentioned in the Wall Street Journal piece is that Apple may move away entirely from 3D Touch. Now, I know that is a feature that many of you in the MacCast community like and enjoy on your iPhones. It feels almost like a power user feature. We've talked about this a little bit. But I kind of see that making sense, especially with the removal of the home button and what's happening with the iPads and the user interface. We don't have 3D Touch on the iPad. It'd be nice to see Apple bring the gesture language into feature parity across the devices. And if they're not going to add 3D Touch to the iPads, which it doesn't look like they're going to do anytime soon, and I don't know if there's a technical reason for that because of the larger phone size, it makes more sense to move back in the other direction where you have the same touch gestures, the touch and hold style gestures that simulator bring back the 3D touch. Now, I know that Apple can't replicate every scenario. We were talking about this a little bit on the iOS show, like the scenario of doing a 3D touch on, say, the app icons on the home screen, right? Apple will need to come up with some other method to do that because currently, if you tap and hold, as you know, you get the icon wiggle for rearranging your icons. So I would imagine they could make that function differently and then just have the tap and hold become the new version of what currently is the 3D touch. But we'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting to see how they manage that. A few other features speculated for future iPhones. Improved Face ID, I think that makes sense. They're saying better flood illuminators for operating in more varied lighting conditions. A new antenna system that supposedly will make it easier for Apple to manufacture the iPhone cases and antennas. And possible support for the next generation of Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi 6 or Wi-Fi AX as it's being referred to. But most likely the new iPhone will not be getting updated cellular connectivity. So Apple's sticking very likely with 4G cellular modems and not moving to 5G. Again, Apple historically has been a little bit slower at moving to new cellular technologies. And it kind of makes sense because it's not going to be in wide deployment or rollout anytime soon. So 2019 is not going to be the year for 5G. We might start to see it, I think, toward the end of the year, but Apple will typically hold off until there's wider deployment before they roll that into their phones. So I think that makes sense. And, you know, overall, I sort of wish we could get through about 6 months with our current model iPhones and enjoying those before we have to start speculating on this stuff for the next generation. But with how Apple's cycles go, you know, once the new iPhones are out, they're already, you know, in prototyping phases, in development phases of the next phones. So that's why we start to hear the rumors all over again. And then one other thing we've been hearing rumors about might be coming soon is the new iPad mini or updates to the iPad mini, something that many of us thought, myself included, might not be a product that Apple was interested in making anymore. But we started to hear inklings a couple weeks ago that Apple has a new iPad mini ready to go into production. We'll likely come out sometime in the first quarter of 2019. Well, 9to5 Mac has spotted a supposed prototype case on a post on Twitter from a known Apple leaker. Interestingly, it shows very little changes, just an antenna line that goes along the outline shape of the current iPad mini's antenna sort of rectangle, you know, the little rectangle or plastic that sits on the back. This would move more to a line, more in line with current designs of the iPhone instead of that big plastic rectangle. But aside from that, everything else looks to be pretty much the same, including a headphone jack, the side volume controls, the lightning connector, also two speakers, not four. Apple has gone to the four speaker design in a lot of their iPads, but it looks like the mini would remain stereo. It also seems possible that it would still have Touch ID, which is a little bit odd to me. I think Apple would want to move across the board to Face ID, but maybe for a cost savings measure, they're not going to do much tweaking. Now, the same speaker also, or the same leaker rather, excuse me, speculates that Apple may use an A9 chip in the updated iPad mini. That seems like too small a bump, if you ask me. I think the current model, the 4, is using an A8 chip, but it is at this point, what, about 3-4 years old? So you'd think Apple would want to go with at least like an A10. Seems to be more likely to me, even though we're all the way up to the A12 at this point. But I think they're going to try and keep the iPad mini at an entry-level price point. We have been hearing that it's probably actually going to come down in price because currently the iPad mini 4 is actually more expensive than the 9.7-inch iPad, which just seems bizarre. So I think Apple will do a little price correction on it. And again, when we expect to see it, very likely in the first quarter here of 2019. I think it's going to come along with an announcement of the new video service and maybe the launching of another product that we're going to talk about a little bit later in this episode. So another big thing that we've been having a lot of conversations about over the past few episodes is the slowing down and declining of iPhone sales. Apple has been taking a lot of heat in the last couple weeks over the fact that they had to do a correction to their guidance for the next quarter, and that's largely due to slower than expected or lower than expected iPhone sales. Apple specifically citing China as part of that issue. Well, financial analyst Ben Thompson on his Strategery blog went into a little bit of analysis and theories as to why Apple should have seen that coming. And he cited basically three errors that he thinks Apple made that led them to need to do the adjustment in guidance after underestimating iPhone demand. He cites China, basically saying that, you know, that Apple doesn't have the lock-in on Chinese consumers that they do in other markets. So a lot of people, once they get an iPhone, they stick with an iPhone, and Apple counts on that quite widely. He thinks they underestimated that effect in China, particularly where they care more about the kinds of services that might be available on a device like WeChat and many others. And so with Android offerings in the mix, it's much easier for consumers in China to switch to another device, especially when they don't necessarily maybe like the hardware offering or aren't interested in the hardware offering that maybe Apple's offering up. And especially when the pricing goes up, they just buy a different brand. Now, he does say that in China, they really do like to have flagship phones. And another factor could be in China that Apple didn't release a flagship phone this year. So iPhone X did pretty well in China last year. This year, there just weren't enough changes. It was an S year. It was a minor update in the opinion of a lot of folks, and therefore, they just weren't buying it. Leading into that, or also playing into that, he says that Apple also overestimated iPhone XR's ability to pick up the slack where iPhone XS might have failed. Basically, again, customers want flagship phones, especially in China, and just offering up an alternative, a lower cost alternative like the iPhone XR, it didn't play out as big as Apple would have thought. So those folks who said, you know, I want the top of the line, I want the flagship, maybe they bought a 10, and then normally they would have jumped on board and bought a 10S when Apple had the higher pricing and price started to come into the mix, rather than falling back and saying, okay, I'll go for this year's model, but I'll go with a 10R. And this actually kind of starts to make sense why Apple made the 10R have so many of the same features as their flagship 10S phones, right? The same chipset. It was the same in a lot of ways. Apple was thinking, okay, well, if people don't respond well to the price, the flagship buyers, they're just going to go for the 10R, and that wasn't really happening. A lot of those folks said, you know what, my 10, my 10 Plus, the flagship phone that I have now, it's okay for now. You know, I'll just wait another year and jump in later. And that had an impact on iPhone sales. And I think that's actually a pretty smart bit of analysis. I didn't really think of that. I never really saw the 10R as a flagship replacement. I really saw that as the option that more consumers are going to buy into when they're ready to upgrade, more price conscious consumers who don't tend to be early adopters or folks who want that flagship model. So I think the iPhone XR is going to be a little bit of a slow burner. It's doing well for Apple now, as you'll hear in a second, but you know, Ben looking at the analysis saying Apple didn't account for that. They weren't expecting iPhone XR to not be as strong up front as it should have been in their mind. He also said finally Apple was counting on iPhone growth, something that just always seemed to happen. I'm not sure that I buy this one. I don't think Apple was that naive about it, but maybe they were. Maybe they were resting on their laurels, thinking that, you know, again, early adopters, they are going to buy regardless of price. As long as we put something new and compelling out in front of them, they are going to go for it. And that really didn't happen this year. I've heard from so many of you in the community through our little sort of informal survey who said, yeah, I just went ahead and waited. It's really been about 50-50, if I'm being honest. A lot of you did upgrade, but I think there were a lot of people who emailed me who said, you know, I normally would upgrade. I would have gone for it, but the new pricing and just how good my current phone is, I'm very happy with it. Between those two things, I've decided to hold off. So I think there were a lot more people holding off on those upgrades, and that was the kind of iPhone growth that Apple wasn't counting on missing out on. So, you know, maybe in markets outside the U.S. they were caught off guard, but I don't think they were caught off guard too much in the U.S. The good news is that even with these quote-unquote problems, Ben sees a lot of benefits for the future. Particularly, next year will not be an S year for the iPhone. So in China, he thinks sales should go better there once Apple releases new flagship models. He also points out the fact that this does seem to show that people prefer the flagship model of phone regardless of the price. Now, the difference here, of course, is they may not upgrade every year, and Apple is going to have to deal with that and account for it. But again, next year, there's going to be this bigger pool of people, I think, who held off, didn't upgrade this year, who probably will go for an upgrade. So along with that, he points out that there's no battery program. So a lot of people did hold on to their older phones because they were able to upgrade the battery at a really cheap price. Tim Cook even commented on that when he made some of his comments in recent interviews. And so unlike last year, there are going to be a lot more folks primed and ready to upgrade. So it should get a little bit better for iPhone, but let's put that into perspective, right? We're never moving back to where iPhone has been. So Apple, it's time for them to move on. They know it's time for them to move on, and they're redoing their strategies. iPhone sales are going to continue to slowly slip and decline. They're not going to fall off a cliff. People are still going to be buying iPhones, maybe just not upgrading as frequently. And we've talked about all of this on the past, so a little bit of this is reiteration. What's interesting is how many people are declaring the iPhone XR a flop already. I think we are way too early to go into that, but the Wall Street Journal ran a piece this week saying that the iPhone XR is, quote, the phone that is failing Apple. And I truly think that that is way off. I think it is really, really wrong. As I mentioned earlier, I said from the get-go that I think the iPhone XR is going to be a slow seller, but ultimately I think it is going to be one of Apple's most popular models this year. And it, as a matter of fact, it already is, according to Tim Cook. He said in an interview with Jim Cramer that he would love to be selling more iPhone XRs, but that it has been Apple's best-selling iPhone every day since its release. And while that sounds great, we do know, in fact, from data that we've seen from different places, including Counterpoint, that the iPhone XR, while it is the best-selling model of iPhone for November, the numbers showed that year over year, iPhone sales were down on the whole for the month of November, about 20%. So that's the decline, right? We have the big decline. So iPhone XR, best-selling iPhone model Apple has right now and has been since it was launched, but Apple is selling fewer phones overall. So, you know, the two kind of play into each other and explain a lot of the data that we've been seeing recently around iPhone sales. In that interview, Tim Cook also did say that Apple would launch new services this year. He didn't comment on when that would happen or what those services would be, although most of us speculate that is the new video service. And like I said, my personal opinion is it will be out sometime in the first quarter. As far as services growth, Apple seems to be putting a lot of energy into that. Reports are claiming that Apple has set a goal for itself of reaching $50 billion in services revenue by 2020. I think it's going to be their play to get them between slowing iPhone sales and whatever the next big thing for Apple is. I don't think we're going to see the next big thing from Apple this year in 2019, but I think there is something coming in 2020. So they're going to have to sort of diversify their product line, diversify where their revenue growth is coming from, and services is going to be a huge part of that transitional revenue, I think, for Apple. Apple is seemingly making moves to prepare for that growth in services, and I think the AirPlay 2 deals on televisions that we're seeing, I think that's part of it. Apple Music on Android and Apple Music coming to Amazon Echo is part of it, and I think we're going to see more of those kinds of partnerships, particularly around the video service moving forward. And I think that's how Apple is going to do that. Again, I think iPhone XR is going to also help lead the way as more consumers, not the early adopters, but more your general consumer starts to upgrade their phone. You know, they tend not to jump on board right away, but at some point throughout the year, all of those customers are going to be looking to upgrade. And I think when they go into the store to buy a phone, the iPhone XR is going to be a really, really attractive option. Apple is pushing promotions pretty hard with iPhone XR. Pricing has gotten more aggressive, and as a matter of fact, Apple this week reduced the price of the iPhone XR to channel partners in China by $100. So that means they're going to be able to offer lower, better pricing in China. The question I have about that, though, is that the right strategy, especially considering the things we just talked about with Ben Thompson over at Strategery, right? If his theories are correct, folks in China want flagship phones. They don't want the iPhone XR. So the pricing doesn't really matter. They're going to hold out for the device they want, and they might hold out until the next launch of the next iPhone. And so again, iPhone sales slowing. As a matter of fact, Nikkei reports that Apple has again cut production volume on iPhone XS and XR models by another 10% for the January to March quarter. So Apple slowing down even production of the devices to compensate for the lower sales. And again, I don't think this is a big problem for Apple. The question is, what will Apple do in 2019? Are they going to roll back on prices? Are they going to keep the prices high, offer fewer choices? I really don't know. I think probably the right strategy is maybe a mix of those things, offer some different level price points. I just wonder, I have to imagine that internally they're doing an analysis of the decision to push iPhone models above the $1,000 price point. It really feels like they may need to move that back. Historically, that's not something that Apple does, however. And you know, it has been shown that us early adopters, we tend to not worry about the price too much. So I have a feeling Apple will keep the prices where they are, try to offer new features, but also recognize that they're just going to sell fewer iPhones over time with each launch, and deal with that in other ways and other parts of the business. But I'd love to know what you think. Shoot me some feedback, emails on this, maccast@gmail.com. And in case you're wondering or thinking, will Max be able to maybe pick up some of that slack? That's not looking to be likely the case. And historically, I don't think we would expect that. As a matter of fact, this week, the latest Gartner numbers showed that Apple shipments of Macs for the December quarter came in at 4.9 million units. That's actually down about 3.8% from 5.1 million units in the same quarter a year ago. And the numbers are a bit more concerning, I think, considering that Apple released two new Mac models in that time frame, the MacBook Airs and the Mac Minis, both, I think, very compelling offerings. Although the Minis, you know, we're dealing with that price thing again. We saw a price increase there, and the market may not be responding very positively to that. I've heard from many of you in the community that feel like that was the wrong move for Apple to make. I think the new Mac Minis are really exciting. There are several of you who have purchased them and are telling me that you absolutely love them. I think the MacBook Airs, however, though, are a very exciting product. I would be in the market for one myself if I didn't have the computer that I have. But I think, again, that's indicative of the decline, right? As more and more of us supplement our computing needs with tablets and phones for daily computer usage, there becomes less and less a dependency on desktops or notebooks. And I think that's why we're seeing these declines. Now, Apple overall is doing slightly better than the entire PC market, which has been declining. And in fact, the PC industry has been in decline for the last 7 years. So this is nothing new. Again, I think it's a shaking out of the market. It's just indicative of how we're doing our computing these days. And we're moving more and more to mobile devices, smartwatches. I think we're going to be moving more and more into wearables. And I talked about this a long time ago. I think the future of computing is a mix of devices, not any one single device. I think you're going to have certain devices for certain use cases, and you're going to jump seamlessly between all of them. And a big thing that's going to enable that is the services that are built on top of it, right? So wearables, I think headsets are coming. I think other kinds of wearables are coming. And to be able to have those things work really well, we're going to need to be able to sync everything across those, be able to seamlessly jump from one to the other. I think voice is going to become a big part of the interface and those sorts of things. So lots of changes going on. But that, at the end of the day, impacts the sales of any one of those devices, be it a smartphone, a tablet, a desktop, whatever it might be. So they're going to be spread out a little bit more. And again, I think consumers are going to be upgrading each one of those a little less frequently. So it's going to be up to Apple and other computer companies to kind of adapt to that. And I think Apple is going to do all right with it. And I think they're already thinking about these things and really planning for the future. Apple is always, I think, historically thinking 3 to 5 years out, and they're usually ahead of the rest of the computer industry, which is why so often when Apple makes a move, say like release a incredible touchscreen smartphone, the rest of the industry has to quickly ramp up and sort of follow along. So personally for me, I've been around long enough in the Apple community to know that we have these ups and downs. This isn't even really a bad down period for Apple, so I'm not too worried about the company and their future, but I am also a fanboy, right? I love Apple, so I can recognize I may have rose-colored glasses. So I'd love to know, again, what some of you are thinking on this. Is this it? Have we finally hit? I know we talk about, Apple is doomed. We hear Apple is doomed all the time, and they never are, which is where my faith comes from. But, will it run out eventually? It did, back in the 90s. It was getting pretty doomy and gloomy. I hope we don't go back to a point like that, but I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions. Shoot me some emails, some comments to maccast@gmail.com, and I look forward to receiving those. Finally, in the news for this week, a little roundup of a few international stories. We do this from time to time. Nothing really big here, but just some things I wanted to comment on, especially if you are outside the U.S. Those of you in Canada, this may not be great news. iTunes TV, movies, music, and audiobook purchases on iTunes are now going to include sales tax. This is due to recent regulation changes in your region, and Apple is now required to tax TV, movie, music, and audiobooks. They are also going to be taxing your Apple Music subscription. So if you're subject to GST, HST, PST, or QST, all of those things will be applied, or I guess probably it's one of them, depending upon your region. I hope not all of them. I'm not sure how the whole sales tax thing works in Canada, but I'm assuming you only get one of those applied to you depending upon which region of Canada you're in. But let me know if I got that wrong. If you're over in Hong Kong or China and you've been wanting to get a HomePod, good news, those are going to start shipping to you this week on January 18th. So that's the good news part. The unfortunate news part is that in China, it's looking like the HomePod is going to be priced at 2,799 yuan or about $414 US. So yeah, you're paying some exchange rate and import things there, I'm sure. That is pretty pricey. So it'll be interesting to see how well HomePod does in that in that region. I'm not expecting it to sort of blaze up the market, but I'm sure there's some of you who have been looking forward to getting a HomePod. And if you do and you like it, let us know what you think about it. And then this one's not really an international story, but it was a little blurb, and I didn't have any place else to stick it. So you're going to get here at the end of the news. A report from Charger Lab claims that Apple has begun production on the Air Power Mat. Yeah, talk about burying the lead. I know there's a lot of folks out there who've been waiting for the Air Power to ship, to be produced, to be made. It looks like it is happening. They cite that there are two partners, LuxShare and Pegatron, who are starting up production of the Air Power charging mat. LuxShare will be providing the components, and Pegatron is going to be handling the assembly. So that means they're getting the thing ready to ship. They don't mention if they're working on the AirPod wireless charging case, but I would assume all of those things are going to come out together. And as far as when we might see them, again, I think this is something that is prime for a spring announcement. So I'm expecting April, May timeframe that we're going to get an announcement of a new iPad mini, the AirPod wireless charging case, the Air Power Mat, and very likely the launching of Apple's new video service. I think that would make a great special event, and spring feels like the right time for that. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I want to take a moment and thank a couple show sponsors, starting with Capterra. You know, years ago, back in the mid-90s, I was working at an ad agency, and through a series of events, I ended up doing a bunch of IT-related stuff for that. And one of my jobs was to find and recommend software and business tools that fit the company's needs and goals. And back then, you know, there really wasn't much of an internet. So actually going out, researching, and finding the right software for my company was pretty challenging. Today, though, I'd be able to use Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online source to help you find the best software solutions for your business. With over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search over 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. So no matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and do it quickly. You can join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. Just visit capterra.com/maccast for free today to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. That's capterra.com/maccast, CAPTERRA.com/maccast. And a big thank you to Capterra for their support of the show. I'd also like to thank SimpliSafe. Here's a stat for you. Do you know that almost half of us make New Year's resolutions every single year? You know, I've made a few of them. Things like learning some software languages, programming languages a little bit more deeply. Trying to do a little bit more with the MacCast outside of the actual audio podcast. So getting out in the community a little more, maybe interacting with some of you a little more. I'd love to do that in 2019. And of course, spending more time with my family. Now, I plan to keep all of these resolutions, but there always seems to be a handful. I have a few more that might get broken. I'm sure you might break some of yours too. It happens to the best of us. But one resolution we're sticking to this year, keeping your home and family safe. That's why I'm recommending SimpliSafe Home Security. SimpliSafe is 24/7 home security with no contracts or catches. They believe the safest place on earth should be your own home, so you feel protected every time you shut the door and leave for work or shut your eyes at night. More than 3 million people already feel this way every day thanks to SimpliSafe, and they're not the only ones. The folks at PC Magazine named SimpliSafe both Editor's Choice and Reader's Choice for 2018. 2019 feels like a good year to ask yourself, is my home as safe as it could be? And if you're thinking, well, maybe this is the time to change that. Just go to simplysafe.com/maccast to get started. That's simplysafe.com/maccast, simplisafe.com/maccast. And a big thank you to SimpliSafe for their support of the show. I have to admit that I am not a heavy user of the Messages app. I do use it occasionally, actually fairly frequently, but it's just not my bag. I'm not into it. It's not like my teenage kids who live and die on the Messages app. So I am going to caveat this little tip that I'm going to give you with, hey, maybe this is something that those of you who are like me will get knowledge from. Others of you might roll your eyes at me and say, oh man, Adam, I can't believe you didn't know this already. So I get it. I already know where this is coming from. Actually, my kids already rolled their eyes at me because I went to share this tip with them and they're like, yeah, Dad, we know. So it could be one of those. But for those of you like me, hey, here we go. It was a little thing that often bugged me, and it has to do with videos inside Messages. Many times when I receive a video in the Messages app, right, the Messages app has this little bubble interface, this chat bubble interface. And so what you get is you get a little video inside a bubble, and when you tap on the play button on that video, it plays inside that tiny little chat bubble. And I could sometimes tap on it again and get it to kind of go to full screen, but it didn't seem to work with any consistency. And especially with like YouTube videos, it seemed to never work. And I'd get it to work sometimes, and then I couldn't figure out what was the magic incantation that I needed to do to make it happen consistently. So I did a little looking into this because it bugged me so much. And here is the trick. The trick is that when you get one of these little videos and it's in the little chat bubble and it has the play button on it, don't tap on the play button, which is exactly what you want to do because you've been trained. I tap the play button, I get to watch the video. No, don't tap on the play button. Actually tap outside, away from the play button, but on the bubble itself. Get the video, and that should get the video to open up in full screen first, and then I can't remember if it autoplays. I think it might autoplay sometimes, but if not, once it's in full screen mode, you could tap play, and then you're playing it, and you get it nice and in full screen. Now, this seemed to be a little bit different with YouTube videos. If it was a YouTube video on my iOS device, what would happen is I would tap outside the bubble. It would still start playing the video in the little chat bubble window, but if I tapped the bubble again, it would then open up into full screen on my iOS device. Again, this is all on iOS devices. On the Mac, it seems to be different with just videos that you might receive. So somebody sends it from, say, the Photos app. There is a little full screen icon up in the corner, you know, the little opposing arrows pointing to each corner of the little icon. You can tap that and it will go into full screen mode and you can watch it that way on your Mac. With YouTube videos, they seem to only play inside the little chat bubble, or you can tap on the YouTube link to get it to open in Safari and YouTube and then watch the video there. I could not figure out how to get a YouTube video to play full screen inside the Messages app. So if you happen to know that trick, if there is a way to do it, shoot me an email and tell me how, maccast@gmail.com. But a little videos in Messages tip for, I'm guessing, about 25% of the audience. I don't know. Maybe we all learned something a little bit new. If you have other tips for Messages or any other app, always feel free to send those in to me, maccast@gmail.com. And it doesn't matter how silly they are. Like, you might think this one's silly, but hey, I think I found it to be a useful tip. And I'm guessing if I did, some of you found that to be useful as well. Another thing that we've been talking about in our community for a while now is this whole bent iPad Pro thing. And don't worry, I'm not going to be getting into the whole debate about it. I've shared this so many times. I do think that this is pretty much a non-issue, although I also do believe that this year's iPad Pro models do seem to be a little bit more prone to bending than maybe prior editions. They might not be as structurally stiff. The new design does create a big, thin, hollow frame. We've seen it from the teardowns. So there's basically no kind of interior or structural aluminum in there. It is just a tray, and then all the components go in there. And then you have little sections along that very thin edge, right? Apple has made these things as thin as possible, where you need wireless transparency. So you, say, have the cutout for the little Apple Pencil strip of plastic that goes there, so you can wirelessly charge your Apple Pencil. Really cool feature, but it does create these two very, very thin strips of aluminum on either side. So you do create the design inherently creates these weak points in the structure. And we can have a debate and argument on whether or not that was a great decision. Apple, for their part, says, look, we test these things. They're in very tight tolerances. You know, Apple's not stupid. I think they know what they're doing. So I don't think these are going to be, and I don't think we've seen any evidence of this, I don't think these are bending left and right for a lot of people, but they are bending occasionally. I personally have not had any issues with mine so far, and I did put this out to the MacCast community, and I have had nobody come forward and really say that they have a bent iPad. So I want to be 100% clear with my position here before we get into this interview. I don't think there's any major issue with the iPad design. I do think it might benefit from being structurally stronger. I don't think there's any negative to that, right? It'd be nice if it didn't maybe bend as easily, but I don't think it's an inherent problem. I don't think we need a panic here. I don't think the problem is widespread. That being said, I do think there is a small percentage of customers who have run into this as a problem. You know, there is the issue of, hey, a lot of people stick these things in their bags. Are they bending more easily in a bag? It's something we could compensate for once we know, but I don't think it's unfair to expect that if you owned an iPad before and put it in a bag, if you put it the new one in the same bag, that it would not have an issue. And in some cases, I think they are having an issue. We're also having this issue of iPads arriving straight out of the box in a curved or bent state outside of Apple's own tolerances. Again, I think it's a very limited set of iPads and circumstances, but what we're seeing a breakdown in is how Apple is handling these customers. The customer relations side of things doesn't sound like it's going very well. And I really wanted to talk to somebody who had been through the process of dealing with a bent iPad for one reason or the other. This week, I found Justin Seeley. He sent out a tweet about it, having the problem on Twitter. I saw his tweet. I reached out to him and said, hey, would you be willing to come on the show and talk to us about your experience? So this is just one person's experience. It is very unique. Let's be clear about that. But it is an experience that we can share and talk about. So I wanted to get him on the show. I wanted to interview him. Justin is a graphic designer, a photographer, an online instructor. He does YouTube stuff. And I asked him to come on the show and share his story. So he did. And here it is. Hey, Justin, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Adam?
I am doing all right. I am doing all right. I want to thank you first for coming on the show to kind of talk about this, because this is like a big thing in our community right now. And I had been reaching out to the MacCast community to try and find somebody who has run across this fatal bend issue, this you know, problem with the 2018, the new iPads. And I think I saw your tweet is where I probably saw that you had run into this issue, and you had not received the best of sort of care from AppleCare. And
yeah,
this is where the discussion is sort of bend. So I guess the place to start is, do you want to talk about what happened? Like, how did you first notice it? And then maybe a little bit about the experience of going into the Apple store to kind of have the issue looked at.
Yeah. So I was actually traveling over the holidays, and it was my first big trip with the iPad. And I have the 12.9 inch 2018 iPad Pro, and I had it in my backpack, and in the backpack was my MacBook Pro, and it was a pair of Bose headphones, you know, not a whole lot. It wasn't like packed to the gills full or anything. And everything was fine during my trip and everything. I didn't really notice anything. And then when we were getting on the plane to come home, I reached in my iPad to get it out to watch a movie on the airplane. And I looked at it, and I there was a noticeable, almost like crescent shape bend to the iPad. And I was like, well, that's weird, considering that, you know, I didn't drop it or do anything to it. And I brought it out. And sure enough, it was curved, you know, enough where I could actually see it just by holding it. Like, I didn't have to really, you know, zero in on it to figure it out.
And you never noticed it before, prior.
Like, no,
there wasn't problem. So
no, and I had checked it too, because I had heard on various podcasts and things like that that this was happening. And I'm one of those people, like, if there's an issue like that, I immediately check mine out. So, right. You know, I checked it and everything was cool. And that was, you know, at least a week maybe before this. And, pulled it out, and sure enough, it was bent. And I was like, oh, I wonder, you know, is it flexible? And I kind of flexed it a little bit to see if it would kind of go back straight.
Yeah, they're flexible. I can attest for that. They will flex a little bit.
Yeah, they do flex. Unfortunately, though, if you have one that is bent and you flex it in the opposite direction, it can cause a buckle.
Yeah.
And so when I rotated it around and looked at the front-facing camera, I noticed an actual buckle right above the Face ID camera, and there was a noticeable warp in the metal frame.
So, and I forgot to ask.
Yeah.
And I don't think you mentioned. Do you have the Wi-Fi model, or do you have the?
It is a Wi-Fi only model.
Okay,
yeah.
So you 12.9
Wi-Fi only.
There's some people who are saying the cellulars are more susceptible because of the, you know, the antenna window.
Oh,
I mean, even the ones that we're talking about here, like the Wi-Fi ones, have the little window for the for the Apple Pencil, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, this is just the plain Wi-Fi model. And so, you know, when I figured out, like, oh man, this is really going to be a problem, especially now that it's got the buckled frame, I was like, oh my goodness. So, you know, I tweeted. If anybody knows me on Twitter, I'm quite vocal whenever I need help with something. I have no qualms about reaching out and trying to get satisfaction, because oftentimes it's faster than regular customer service. Apple was very responsive on Twitter. They DM'd me within a few minutes. They had me on the phone with somebody the next day to talk about it. And when I was on the phone, I was actually quite encouraged, because the person on the phone seemed genuinely concerned. They were like, oh no, this is, you know, not supposed to happen. You know, we'll take care of this. We'll get you in to see somebody right away. And so they booked me at my Apple store. I actually have two locally here in Nashville, and that part of it comes into play a little bit later, having two Apple stores. So I go to the Apple store the next day, and before I even like pull the iPad out to show the guy, I'm like explaining to him kind of what happened, and I'm already getting kind of like an eye roll out of him, which was kind of disheartening. And he's like, yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I mean, did you get a sense that maybe it was just because this has been like his life for the past couple of weeks, or do you think it was like, you know, because it has been so much in the media, or
right,
do you think he was just like really not believing you, or
I honestly don't know, because it, on the one hand, it may be that it was just what he was dealing with at the time, but
he shouldn't be reacting that way. Just
right.
Be upfront, right?
Right.
You're at the Apple store, and you know, I've never had that kind of thing happen to me. So
exactly.
You know, I'm not saying like it's okay, but I was just curious vibe you got from him.
Well, the interesting thing was, I might have thought that had he not made the statement that if this were a major problem, Apple would have done something more public about it. Like, that's what he said to me.
Oh,
right?
Really?
And I was like, okay, well, it is happening. I actually showed him, you know, articles and things like that to kind of back up my case. Because I'm like, look, dude, like, I did not do this on purpose. Now, when
did
I did show
Apple's
it to
VP,
him,
you know, former VP of marketing, brought one back that was bent.
I actually showed him that. Right. He did not know who that was, did not care. And, you know, and that's fine, you know. But when I showed it to him, granted, yes, I had, you know, tried to put it back into place, and it had caused that buckle in the frame. Yeah. That was a problem of my own doing. I acknowledged that to him at the time, and he was like, well, you know, this falls outside the scope of, and I'm like, well, dude, I mean, it's obviously still in a crescent shape. It's bent. Like, I did not do that to the thing.
Right.
He was very adamant that regardless, they do not cover a bend, even if it comes that way, like out of the box. He was very, very upfront about that. And he said, this falls outside the scope. If you wanted to swap it out, we would have to do a complete device replacement. That would be $650. And I said, okay, I don't, Yeah, I mean, I don't have that kind of money, right? I traded in two devices to get this iPad. Like, I don't have a whole lot of money.
Yeah, so you didn't have the AppleCare. You didn't have the AppleCare Plus.
I did not have the AppleCare Plus
because the other thing they've been offering people, right, is that well, you can pay your deductible, which uses up one of your deductibles for no reason, and then
right.
You know, they'll do the swap for whatever the 69 or whatever they. I forget what the.
Yeah, price that was
is.
His. that was his second suggestion. Actually, oh, really? Was to. Yeah, he said, you know what? You don't have the AppleCare, so here's what I'll do. I'll forget you came in here today. You go home and you sign up for AppleCare, and then make another appointment and come back in, and we'll swap it out. I think it was like $49 or $59.
Yeah, see, that already says right there to me, and I have heard stories like this, unfortunately, from other Apple stores, is like not every genius is created equal, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think even Apple, if they heard this, would like hearing that sort of thing. You know, Apple employee telling customers to basically be dishonest about something is
exactly
a little crazy.
Yeah, and I was not, you know, cool with that either. And so, you know, when I left, I was a little disheartened, right? Because I've been a diehard Apple fan for a long time. I was not about to pay $650. I didn't even want to go home and spend the $130 plus $50 to get it fixed, you know, because it was $130 for AppleCare and then the $50 deductible to get it fixed. I was very bummed out about that. So I didn't really know what to do, and I had almost accepted the fact that I was going to have to like deal with a bent iPad, right?
Right.
But something in me told me that maybe this guy was just having a bad day. Maybe it was just an off experience, because I have had different experiences with different geniuses. As you said, I've had different experiences at different stores. So like I said earlier, we have two Apple stores here in Nashville. So I booked a second appointment at my other Apple store. And also I made sure to do it because here's the other thing. I bought this during the holiday window. So I technically had until January the 8th to turn this thing in, like as a return. Now, I don't know if they would have taken it,
right?
Given the fact that it was bent or broken.
Saw the damage, yeah.
Right. But I thought, well, it's another option, or at least I could tell them that that's what I was going to do. So I set up another appointment. I went in, and this was 2 days ago. I went in, and this time I met with, I believe he was a manager, because he was wearing like a different kind of jacket. Like, you can kind of tell the Apple employees that are like higher up. I don't know they all wear different jackets or whatever, or different shirts. And so this guy was very nice. He was so concerned about it. He actually asked me, he was like, do you know, is this a more widespread issue? Is there something I should be known? Is there something I should know about here? Like, so I showed him articles and I showed him Apple's support page, and and he was like, this is an issue, and I'm so sorry this happened.
That's been weird. You know, for him to say that, because I can't imagine that they're not aware of it, and I'm pretty sure that there's been internal communications, at least that I've been told about. Mm-hmm. That have been going on. Obviously, the thing is like Apple has to usually play dumb, like they can't pretend like they know this stuff. It's all this, you know, it's all part of their secretive thing, right?
Right.
So, like, they can never admit that this is a problem to you publicly.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I wonder if he was playing along or if he really didn't know. I can't imagine that he didn't know about this, but just
I don't know. He brought in other people as we were standing there. There were more people because this is a.
Maybe
this
he was
is
just
not
trying
the,
to prop up his story, right?
Yeah, this was not one of the remodeled stores. This still has the Genius Bar, like the actual bar in the back. So he was like, "Hey, Jim, like, have you ever heard of this?" And like, you know, he's showing them the articles and stuff, and they're like, "No, we, you know, I've never heard of that. That's strange, but man, that's a problem." And so, you know, he was very quick to say, you know, no problem. We'll swap this out. It's within the 60 days or, you know, the return window, whatever. And so he took care of it. And as of yesterday, I have a new iPad. I went into the store to pick it up. And the funny part was when I get into the store to pick up the second one, I stopped the person who brought it out and I said, will you stay here and watch me unbox this thing? And and they were like, why would you do that? And I said, because I want this on record if this thing has any sort of curve or bend. And they kind of laughed it off. They didn't really know what was going on, obviously. And so they said, sure, no problem. So I take it out of the box and I picked it up and looked it down the side, like I was kind of looking down the sight line of a gun. And sure enough, it curves a little bit. Like if I have the screen facing my right side, it curves a little bit to the right if I'm looking straight down. It's not a huge bend by any stretch of the imagination, but it is there. It is a curve.
Is it enough that if you were to place it face down on a table, would it actually rock?
It does not rock. Let's see. It does not rock discernibly, I don't think, any more than it does when it's on the camera bump side.
If it's on the camera bump side, it definitely rocks, right?
Mine,
I have tested many times, and it is flat. Like, there's no play at all.
Right. It doesn't move, like, up and down. Like, one corner does not move up and down like a bad table at a restaurant. But it does have, I can feel a little bit of almost, like, give when I press down on one of the corners. Like, enough where I can press it down. And I can, you know, just by looking at it, I can, I mean, I don't have that discernible of an eye, but it's visible.
That's what we've been seeing online. You know? So, like, there is definitely evidence that this is happening to some people. Unfortunately, it sounds like it's happened to you twice, which is a little concerning to me because I was kind of hoping that maybe it was just a small batch or you know, maybe frames coming out of a certain facility, and it was something that maybe Apple could get a handle on. It's a little concerning that, you know, here's another one that's bent. But I also have to wonder, because you mentioned, because I said, well, you know, why did you, we were talking a little bit earlier, and I asked you, why would you accept this one?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's bent. You know, she saw you take it out. It's bent. Why didn't you just turn around and be like, all right, bring me another one. Let's just keep them rolling until we get one that's flat.
My main concern was that, A, I needed the iPad for work. I do use this quite a bit as a work machine now. And the unfortunate thing was they had none in stock, and it was going to take 3 more days to get another one.
No replacement ones, right? Because they're giving you the brown, what exactly. It's internally called the... I don't think they call them brown boxes anymore, but it used to be called the brown box because they would actually literally come in a brown paper box instead of the white, you know, like iPad box or whatever. I think they might just come in a plain white box now.
It was a plain white box, and it had the plastic wrap on it, but otherwise it was not a normal box.
So what I was going to say there is, you know, now I wonder too, though, maybe it's a little bit of a self-perpetuating prophecy, but you'd think they would check for this because, you know, I have to wonder if typically what happens is they take the returns in, you know, for repairs, and then they figure out, they refurbish them, right? They take good component parts and from ones that are working, replace the broken ones, QA them, test them, and then that's what you're getting as a replacement. So, you know, half of me wonders, well, if they're taking in a bent iPad frame and then they're reusing it, it's still bent. You know what I'm saying?
You're right. Exactly. Like,
so, but you would think they, you know, with all the publicity, they'd be checking with that. And, you know, supposedly the tolerance is 400 microns is what officially Apple had said. So there can be a quote unquote bend, but no one can tell me that you're going to notice the kind of thing that you're talking about, where I look down the edge of it and I'm seeing a physical curve at 400 microns. You know, that's, I think, what you said, 4 or 5 sheets of paper.
Like, right.
That's not going to be a visible bend. So, I mean, did they offer to let you to order another one and let you hold on to that one for a while? Or like, what
she
was
she asked me what I wanted to do. She did ask me that, you know, she was like, you know, well, if you're unsatisfied with this one, you know, certainly we would make it right.
Okay. So that's good.
And I said, you know, there's no buckle. I'm not going to try to like bend this thing back. I'm not going to try to do anything. I immediately asked where the cases were in the store, which, by the way, there's not a lot of cases in the Apple store for the iPad Pro. That's a problem.
Yeah, it usually takes a little while for new ones to hit, you know, sort of out. So,
but I did buy a pretty sturdy one immediately upon leaving at Target, and so I now keep it heavily encased. And I'm honestly not going to put it in a backpack. If I have to go with this thing somewhere, it's gonna, like, I'll buy some sort of leather folio or something that I can just carry around. I'm afraid to put it in a backpack. That's a big problem. Frankly, but it is something that I'm cognizant of now, because nothing that costs that much money should be that easy to, it does not destroy, but to distort, I guess, would be the best way to put it. It's just disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said earlier, when this story came out, I have been checking mine obsessively. Now, I don't put it, take it back. I have put it in a bag with my laptop, but it's literally a bag and laptop sandwich, and that's it. That's all that's in there. So two mm-hmm. flat things.
Right.
And I have not, luckily, knock on wood, had any issues with mine. But when it did start happening too, and actually when the initial reports came out, where people were saying, well, these things, the frame is not that strong, I have kind of just held it in my hands on either side and, applied very light pressure. And I could see, it is... The metal is thin enough that enough pressure is going to probably bend it. I'm
sure.
curious to know what that pressure level is, and I'm sure people have probably scientifically tested it at this point. Probably need to go search YouTube for some more videos. But yeah, I think it is somewhat of a minor issue for aftermarket, but certainly it's a massive issue if they're coming bent out of a box, right? That's right. A problem, and I think the biggest story here is I do think it's limited in terms of the people that are being impacted, at least by that side of it, coming bent mm-hmm. out of a box. What I am most frustrated by, and I appreciate you sharing your experience, because is that experience part of it, is how is Apple handling this internally? And I think they're not doing a good job of handling the customer facing side of this.
Right. It doesn't seem like there is a mandate from the top on how to handle this, like, globally. They seem to be almost treating it as a one-off each time. Like, and that's a problem, because the fact that I was able to go to two stores within 20 minutes of each other and get two totally different results, one of which was extremely frustrating, the other of which was actually really nice and satisfying, that's a problem. I mean, that reflects bad on Apple retail, and that's not what they want to see, I'm sure.
My hope is just, it's just time. I mean, it things move slowly. I think people sometimes forget that Apple is a massive corporation, right, with lots of retail stores and lots of Genius bars, and like, even from the time something hits, the media moves so fast, so mm-hmm. We're moving really quickly, but the issue crops up, things start to happen internally at Apple, it's going up and down chains, back and forth, and then at some point I think it will get resolved, and I think we will see some changes, but until then, we're gonna have more little stories like this, unfortunately. I think they'll all get on board, and they'll have a wider policy where it's like, no, let's just swap them, because it's not a widespread issue. It's a small percentage, and I don't think there's a huge concern about abuse either. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people bringing in iPads that they bent themselves and trying to
replace. And what would be the point of even doing it?
Well, a small amount would. I mean, I could see someone who, literally, I forgot it was in my bag, and or I came home and I set my bowling ball on top of it. But maybe it was laying on the couch and I sat on it, right? Okay, it could bend in that scenario, and then you take it in and say, oh no, it just came that way.
Right.
That does happen. But again, I don't think that's the majority of people, and I think Apple ultimately will probably understand that. So,
yep.
Well, cool. I'm glad you had a successful resolution, at least. Sorry you had to kind of go through that experience, but thank you for agreeing to come on and talk about it and sort of share your experience. I really do appreciate it. Before we leave, I do know that you do some things online. Have some stuff that you're into. You want to tell people, about what you're doing and where they can find you and follow along, maybe future tweets and things like that.
Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at Justin Seeley. That's where you can always find me ranting and raving about various things, as well as, sharing content I create. I am an online educator. Bulk of my content now is on YouTube. So you can go to youtube.com/Justin Seeley. And I do a lot of tutorials there, as well as what I call Tech Tip Tuesdays. So helping people use their technology. I did some stuff on the Amazon Echo recently, and I do a lot of Photoshop and photography related things. So that's probably the best place to go. And then if you do that and follow me on Twitter, you probably won't miss too much of everything else that I do. So
awesome. Well, thank you very much again for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. It was a pleasure. Thanks.
So there you go, Justin Seeley and his experience with a bent iPad and how it was sort of handled by Apple. You know, what do you think? I gave my thoughts and opinions in that interview, and I'd love to hear from you. You know, as I stated there, I think the issue here is more about how Apple is responding to the few incidents we've been hearing about versus any real actual problem with the, you know, systemic problem with the iPad. And I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on this topic. So if you want to share them with me, you can shoot me an email or an audio comment to maccast@gmail.com. And I guess while we're on the subject of Apple Care and support, I have another little tip for you that kind of came about in a few different ways. I've been hearing from a couple people, specifically over in the UK, about AirPods and AirPod issues. And we were recently actually talking on the iOS show about our AirPods and how it seems like now, about 2 years in, we're starting to each have our own little battery and charging issues. I know in my case, I have my right AirPod, which seems to not charge as well as the left one and depletes a little bit faster. So there's kind of like this imbalance in the charging state. I've been thinking about taking it into Apple, seeing what they would do in terms of a replacement. I have a feeling what I'm going to hear is that I'm going to get the standard spiel, which is, hey, we can give you a new one for $69 US, or if you want to have the battery serviced and leave it with us for a few days, that's $49 US. And my concern with that is, like, if I get a new one, just the right one, then I have the left one that's also about 2 years old, and it's going to need a battery replacement pretty soon. And at the end of that, I'm either in $140 or about $100 into repairs for my old ones. And we've been hearing there's possible new AirPod release on the horizon. Apple might be planning some new ones. So I sort of feel like, why would I want to do that? Why wouldn't I just sort of deal with my failing ones for now, manage it as I have been, sort of, you know, swapping them in and out or putting them back in the battery case more frequently, and then just simply buy new ones? Because, you know, it's a lot of money. I paid $170 for these about 2 years ago, and it seems crazy to me that the batteries are only going to last for about 2 years, and then I'm going to have to need new ones. And it just seems like the longevity might not be there. Now, again, I don't think this is a huge problem. I haven't really monitored it very closely. This is just something that I'm feeling like feels like the batteries are going bad, and they're tiny little batteries, right? So I don't know what the expectation should be. Should I get 3 years, 4 years of usage out of the battery, or what? I wish the battery replacements were a little bit cheaper. You know, $49 per AirPod seems a little bit pricey, but I don't know. But anyway, I've been in this position about thinking about this. And then I've heard from a couple of people in, like I said, the UK, who also ran into problems with their AirPods. They went into Apple retail stores, each separately, talking to different people, and were kind of given the same thing. Well, we can replace one for $70. But then what was interesting was at least one of them was given the advice by a genius in the Apple retail store. Hey, look, I won't log what we talked about here. Go home or come back and then mention the EU consumer law. And I think the other person who had emailed me said he went into an Apple retail store, heard what they were going to do for him, and then went back and did some research and found out about the EU consumer law. And both of them were able to get a more satisfactory result by mentioning the EU consumer law when they were in the Apple retail store or talking to Apple on Apple support. And in case you don't know what this is, if you're like me and you live in the US, we don't get a nice consumer law like this. But essentially, what happens is that you have additional rights when it comes to your warranty and to product claims if you live in the EU. And as a matter of fact, listener Gavin was one of the people who emailed me, and he had an AirPod that was having battery issues just about a little before the 2 years of ownership of his AirPods was up, right? So this is right before the end of 2 years of ownership. And the EU consumer law, I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com for those of you who don't know, it says that consumers in the EU have a 2-year guarantee on protection against faulty goods or, and this is the important part, quote, goods that don't look or work as advertised. And I'm saying it's that last part that can work in your favor in the case of AirPods, because you have to actually specifically mention this EU law when you go in and are talking to Apple about service. They will not typically offer this up to you out of the box. And that last part, goods that don't work as advertised, comes into play because on Apple's website, they say, quote, and the W1 chip manages battery life so well, you can listen to 5 hours on a single charge. So they're claiming 5 hours of battery life. If you're getting less than that, then you may fall under this EU consumer law, because that law says that companies are legally bound to any public statements, especially through advertisements or on labels. So they have to meet those standards. Otherwise, the product is essentially considered defective or not living up to manufacturer's claims. So if that is the case, customers in the EU can ask for a repair or replacement of the product or a reduced price or even a refund. And again, this worked in favor of both of the people that I heard from this week. So in Gavin's case, they actually did replace his AirPod under this program free of charge, even though he was technically outside of the standard 1-year warranty that Apple offers on the product. So again, it's always good to kind of know your rights. And, you know, some of you might be thinking, well, that's not kind of cool. You know, Apple has a 1-year warranty and this is sort of outside of that. No, this is the rights deemed by your country, by the governing bodies in your region. It is a right that you get. So if Apple is operating a business in those regions, they have to abide by and apply by these laws. And I don't think Apple has any problem with that. I do find it a bit interesting that they're not kind of publicly open about this. Like, they won't tell you about this. You have to specifically bring it up to get satisfaction. I kind of don't feel great about that, but I can understand from a business perspective why that's their standard policy. I just wish they were a little more open and upfront about this stuff. And it wasn't kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge from somebody at the Genius Bar who knows about this to allow you to kind of take advantage of it. So that's why I thought I'd share it with you here on the MacCast. So if you have any thoughts or opinions on this, of course, as always, you can send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. Okay, I want to finish up the show today with a little bit of a comment and a question about augmented reality and AR and iOS apps. You know, ARKit is a really, really cool thing. It's a cool technology. I also think it is a big technology that is going to play into whatever is next for Apple. So I think it's cool to talk about it. And I received this voicemail from Josh.
Hey, Adam. One of the things that sold me on the new devices that came out, I bought a new iPad Pro and the iPhone XS, was the potential to do awesome augmented reality and virtual reality with all that processing power. I was wondering if you could ask the community what kind of AR, VR stuff that they're using out there. I honestly haven't explored the App Store very much on this, but one thing I did try over the weekend was the HomeCourt app that was shown during the Apple keynote. I have a basketball goal in front of my driveway and set up my phone to record the shooting. I hate to say that my percentage was quite terrible, but the stats that it kept track of were pretty incredible. It seemed to do a very accurate job of tracking where I shot from and how many shots that I had made. It's really amazing. Then my kids came home and we tried some dribbling exercises that you can also do in the app. My kids absolutely loved it. You prop the phone up somewhere on the ground. I kind of put it up against my garage, and you point the FaceTime camera in your direction so you can see the screen. You line yourself up and see yourself, and then you're put on like a timer, basically, and you have to hit spots with your hand, or you hit spots with the ball, which causes you to shuffle, to switch your dribbling hands, and shift around quite a bit. I'm assuming if we use it a lot, we'd actually become pretty good dribblers. But my kids loved it and had a whole lot of fun with it. It kept your score on that, and it was a really, really fun app. So I was just wondering what people are using out there. Love your show. Keep up the great work.
Hey, thank you so much for sending in that comment. And it's, I guess, it's a little mini review, Josh, of that app. I had totally forgotten that that app had been released. It was amazing when I saw the demo, and it sounds like it's amazing in person. And it feels like that is the future, right? That is the perfect kind of application and kind of app for augmented reality. And I know there is a lot of AR kit apps out there. I have to admit, I don't personally use any on a regular basis. And that, I think, is because I've generally found that most of them are a little bit gimmicky, right? There's not a lot of utility in the ones that I've run across. That's not to say there aren't amazing ones like that basketball app out there, but I just personally haven't run across them yet. So I think this is a great idea. Let's throw it out to the community and see what kinds of apps they're using. And I really like the focus to be on something that is truly using the AR features in a unique way. That's more than just like throwing it on top of an existing app or doing something like that. I'll give you a few of them. I even think some of these are a little bit on the edge. Well, maybe not the first one, but the other two are a little bit, still kind of gimmicky. The first app that I was really impressed with, and it was actually one of the first AR kit apps to hit the market, is a game called Arise, or A-R-I-S, right? AR, so the A and the R are capitalized, Arise, and it's by Climax Studios. And what's really unique about this one is it sets up a augmented reality environment in wherever you're playing. It could be on a tabletop, or I did it in the middle of my living room. And what you're doing is you're trying to help a character sort of go along a path, and he'll run into different obstacles and things like that, and you're trying to get him from point A to point B. But the way you have to do it is you actually have to change the perspective of the 3D model that he's walking on. And you do that by physically walking around this environment and this model. And you have to get into different positions, up low, up high. There's different interactions you have to do. And you have to get these little targets to, from a perspective, line up. And then once you've lined them up in a proper way, then the little character can continue to walk along, or he can continue towards his goal. So it's actually using the environment, it's using the augmented reality 3D model in a way where you're physically having to move around to achieve the goals of the game. And that is a truly unique thing. I haven't seen too many games actually doing that sort of perspective stuff. So that's one I would really recommend checking out. I think it really does show off the power of ARKit. Another one that's somewhat useful, although I haven't had much success with it, is the IKEA Place app. This is the thing that allows you to browse IKEA furniture through the app, and then you can actually place it in augmented reality into your environment. Now, they say it's supposed to accurately place it for sizing and perspective. I never seem to be able to get that to work. So I just don't know if my rooms are too cluttered, there's too much stuff going on. But generally, the objects that I place tend to be oversized. I think they look a little bit too large. If they really are that large in person for the room, then I don't think I'd be buying any IKEA furniture. But it is kind of cool. You know, it's got the lighting effects and the shadowing picked up from the room like ARKit can do. So that one's kind of fun to play around with. But again, I almost feel like it's more of a fancy demo than something that I would actually ever use for buying furniture from IKEA. And then the last one is a more recent one. It's kind of like a Pokemon Go app. It's called Ghostbusters World, and it actually allows you to project and fight poltergeists with, you know, a proton pack in your living room. And again, a little bit gimmicky, but it is kind of fun. It's pretty neat to kind of put yourself in that environment and see a ghost flying around your living room, and then you can blast it with a blaster. I get the fun factor, right? A lot of this stuff has fun factors. But again, I'm looking for more of those utility apps. Things like Apple's Measure application, which is also really cool. Not something that I think I would use for accurate measurements. Like, I wouldn't want to build my house off of the measurements that the app takes, but it gets pretty close. It gets within range. So for estimating or guesstimating maybe the square footage of a room, something like that. If you're just trying to get a rough estimate of maybe ordering some flooring or stuff, something like that, then it could be handy, you know, that kind of app. And I know there are a bunch of cool apps out there, and I'm sure there's some that have a little bit more utility. And so if you happen to know one of these apps, shoot us an email. Even better yet, give us a review of an app that you really like, an audio comment, an audio review. Send those to maccast@gmail.com, and I look forward to receiving those. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9, and you can leave a voicemail message there. If you need show notes, links to anything I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you'd like to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that will do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.